You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Career, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, happy Wednesday, happy hump day. Fantastic show planned for you today. We're going to pull up at Isaiah Thomas's crib, talk some LeBron James, and would LeBron James be the same superstar in Isaiah, Magic, Michael, and Larry Bird's era? But we're going to start today's show talking about Michael Jordan, and we'll be joined, we'll go out to Jim Jackson's crib for his insight on Michael Jordan and the ramifications of the Last Dance documentary continue to reverberate around Michael Jordan, including now former Chicago Bull Craig Hodges coming out and trying to put Michael Jordan on full blast for his comments calling Scottie Pippen selfish, and Craig Hodges upset, claiming that Jordan made these comments about joining the Chicago Bulls and there being a cocaine circus, when in reality, Jordan just responded to a question about an article that said that the Bulls before Jordan got there were a cocaine circus. Jordan answered the documentarian's question. Craig Hodges is blaming Michael Jordan for that. Charles Barkley has talked in the past 24, 48 hours about the rift between he and Michael Jordan, how they went from being best friends and brothers to not speaking to each other ever since Charles Barkley was critical of Michael Jordan as the general manager of the Charlotte Bobcats. And last but not least, we've seen Michael Jordan during this documentary talk about his hate for Isaiah Thomas. We've seen in the documentary Michael Jordan talk about living in this bubble, and it leads to the question, would you really want to be like Mike? There was obviously the famous Be Like Mike commercial, and watching this documentary and watching the fallout from this documentary and getting this unique insight into what it was like to be like Mike, I want to ask Marcellus and Jim Jackson, and Marcellus, get us rolling here, would you want to be like Mike? Would you want to be Michael Jordan?
Nah. I never wanted to be like Mike, even in the heyday. Even when he was popping in the cultural sense and him being an icon at his greatest powers, his greatest heights, I never wanted to be like Mike for many reasons, including probably the core reason of I'm not into doing the identity swap and trading places with someone of this world. Being Marcellus Wiley's been pretty good to me, just to say that. And when you start thinking about this mental experiment and exercise of swapping with someone else, I hope y'all know y'all have to take the good with the bad. And the flip side of the coin of being like Mike, not so attractive. The gambling obviously is an issue. You know, he went through a divorce. More importantly, what we're talking about right now is the fact that he may have his boys, but he certainly has a long list of ex-boys that I'm not in support of in terms of what this documentary is highlighting. It's highlighting that this is a guy who has this insatiable desire to compete at all costs, and at all costs to all human sacrifice and all human beings in his existence. There are too many people who are sitting there suffering because Michael Jordan was in the quest to do one thing. And that's just not the way I want to get down. I'm more into win-win propositions in terms of how I connect with other people. And it just doesn't seem like Michael Jordan was into that. kudos to his success and his record. I'm sure he doesn't want to swap places with me either. But if you want to ask me if I want to be like Mike, never did, never will.
Interesting you say that, Marcellus, too. And I say this, when you were growing up, who did you kind of idolize from a football perspective?
John Elway and Eric Dickerson.
And because when you were younger, you didn't really have a clue of about who they were personality-wise. You just kind of saw what you saw on that Sunday or in interviews. So that kind of gave you something to admire, right?
Yep, their game as well. But, the game led it. Yep.
Right. So you're answering the question now, be like Mike, or never wanted to be like Mike from a basketball player. I'm 49 years old. I can answer that question a lot differently now than I could when I was 15, 16 years old. I grew up in the Michael Jordan era. Come fly with me. All the stuff that Michael Jordan was all about, I loved it because there was only certain things I knew about Mike at the time. When I grew up, it was first Dr. J because he had the afro. When I was in the sixth grade, fifth grade, I wanted to be like Dr. J. Then I loved Magic. But Mike was something different at the time. And again, it's not like growing up in this era with LeBron James and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. You know everything pretty much about them because of social media. Back then, you didn't know. You didn't know some of the intricate details in Michael Jordan's life like you would happen to know now about some of our stars. What I love about the documentary, which I've always known because I had an opportunity to be around the Bulls in those mid-90s when they were making their championship run, was that Mike wasn't perfect. Mike had his flaws. Mike had, you know, his grudges. Mike had his pettiness, like we all do. It's just now being exposed to this point to a lot of people, especially young people, who really don't know the lineage of Michael Jordan. They know highlights, but they don't know the deep detail. They don't know back when, you know, the whole China thing came up about Nike in regards to sweatshops and Nike making shoes. And Mike didn't say anything about it at the time. We all talked about Craig Hodges, you did, in regards to going to the White House in 91. When Craig really wanted to talk to George Bush, I think, about some issues in the black community, asked Michael about it. Michael's like, nah, I'm good on that. So I would take aspects. I love him as a basketball player. Would I love to have his skill set? You better believe it. Would I love to have the Jordan brand? You better believe it. Would I love to have his bank account? You damn Skippy, I would. But there are other aspects of it that I can put to the side because my background, I grew up differently. I see things differently. And at an older age, I think differently. So I would like to have some aspects, but like he said, you got to be in my shoes for years to understand what it is to be like.
You
got to
take it all, though, Jimmy. You got to take it all. You can't be over here piecemealing it.
You asked me the question.
Listen, I do want to say this because I covered part of Jim's college career. And so there are people that are too young that will think I'm crazy when I say this. But there was a time when Jim was at Ohio State where people's imagination went to, oh my God, Jim Jackson might be another version of Michael Jordan. And I say this in all seriousness. Jim had the size. Jim has the looks. He has the whole thing. And he, as an athlete and as a player, he had a chance to be a great, great NBA player in the mold of a Michael Jordan. And so I'm just wondering, Jim, as you look at all the price that comes along with being Michael Jordan and being that great of a basketball player, when you look at it now with 49-year-old eyes, would you have liked to have been that great of a basketball player and deal with all the complications that go along with that, that I think are being exposed here from this Last Dance documentary?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt, I would deal with it because with success and greatness comes the other side of it. When my son was, you know, seventh or eighth grade, I told him, being my son has a catch 22. You can't have the good without the bad. You can't separate the two. So the sooner you figure out how to deal with the adversity, the expectations, the backstabbing, the better off you'll be in life. I would take it in a heartbeat because being at the top of your profession is what we all strive for. And there's you know, some things that come along with that. And we're not perfect. You know, I'm not perfect. I'm divorced. I messed up. I've done some things in the past, but I've learned along the way through my journey. And I think Mike has also. But to go back to your original point, undoubtedly, I'd love to have his career being probably the greatest to ever step on the court in graces with his talent.
Marcellus, let me ask you a similar question in terms of let's keep it to football. If you could have been one of the greatest football players of all time, reached a Lawrence Taylor level, a Tom Brady level, a Peyton Manning, and kind of live in that fishbowl world that the greats of the greats live in, would you have chosen that? Do you think you would have been able to deal with the complications that go along with that?
Oh, absolutely, I would have chosen that. I mean, I think every time you went out there and practice and mental preparation, let alone on the actual playing surface, playing field, that was your choice every time to be that great. And when you have your shortcomings, you also understand where you are in the stratosphere. You deal with that reality. But it's funny that we're going to ask a question like, do I want all of his success without his failures? And we know that that's an incomplete equation. You got to take it all. But certainly I would have been able to handle what comes with a higher altitude of success. I desired it. I landed where I landed, and I had to adjust to that reality. Certainly far from ground zero, but certainly far from the Mount Rushmore or the GOAT status that we're talking about with Michael Jordan. But look, I'm a guy in college. If you look at it, I can show you pictures. Every single poster in my dorm room was damn near Michael Jordan. Part of it was the consumerism. He was flooding the streets, and everybody thought it was cool to be like Mike, and I thought it was cool to see Mike. But really, I was a beneficiary of Michael Jordan's greatness. 100 pounds ago, I used to get modeling gigs, no lie, in New York City. I got pictures. 100 pounds ago, my little muscles, 6'5", 100 pounds ago again, reminding you that, bald head, tall, dark. Oh, man, everything that Michael Jordan couldn't get was looking at me like, I take this carbon copy of it for a second there. So, look, who didn't want to be like Mike in some respects, but in totality, nah, I'm good.
The question I have watching Last Chance, Doc, looking at Michael Jordan on TV, talking about I hate Isaiah Thomas. You find out the anger he played with throughout his career. I'm starting to question, like, is Michael Jordan happy? Is he happy? Because I think we all dream about being as wealthy, being as successful, being as revered as Michael Jordan. But I'm literally leaving this Last Dance documentary wondering if Michael Jordan is happy. Jim, you go first, then Marcellus, you have the final word.
I mean, and that's a relative term too, being happy, okay? Especially with Michael Jordan, because of everything that he's accomplished. And we always talk about this on this show. Your childhood sets you up for things that happen to you when you're an adult. He had a lot of competition with his brother. His whole thing was beating his brother. Some things he had to deal with when he was younger. How much does that play into his competitive nature to always be the best? You would look at Michael Jordan. This is a misinterpretation of people all the time to say, you got all this money. Why wouldn't you be happy? It's still something out there that maybe you didn't accomplish, something that nags at you as an athlete, especially Michael Jordan being the greatest. Okay. Was it the articles at the time when people were nitpicking at things? Was it Isaiah Thomas? Was it Clyde Drexler compares? I don't know what it is, but it's always something there. And it does seem like Michael, whether it's, you know, he hasn't done what he needed to do in Charlotte right now. You can see some of it come out in his Hall of Fame speech. He has everything in the world, so why complain? But again, it goes back to the personality, who and what made him very special. Is that his relentless drive to be the best at what he could be. And right now, maybe post his career, in particular, ownership perspective, he hasn't reached that pinnacle yet. And maybe that's what we see a lot of times with kind of the unhappiness or uneasiness in these interviews that are starting to come out a little bit more, in the Last Dance.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to assess because we all wear our happiness different. But that said, I love what Jim is talking about in terms of And when you're always on this quest to conquer, to compete, when is enough enough? My therapist talks about this a lot. When you just are always in this attaining mode, I need the next. Mm-hmm. You get a big house, I need a bigger house. I get one car, I need two cars. If you always are talking about the next, then you're never going to be completely satisfied or, more importantly, fulfilled. So I look at Michael Jordan through those liquor store eyes that we all see when he looks in that camera. It is wearing a lot of joy, a lot of pain, and a lot of relief. And I think he really has this unique concoction of all of those emotions. But he used to be in protected airspace, and literally, and no pun intended, protected, restricted airspace. You cannot touch the GOAT because he lived in so many of our imaginations pre-social media. It was just folklore. And we asked the question, you asked it, Jason, will this documentary make us look at Michael Jordan differently? Absolutely. Better or worse? Worse. One, you can see the flaws in Jordan that before they weren't so tangent. They weren't right there. And two, you also start to see who he was surrounded by, not only in his team atmosphere, but in competition. To a player is writing me, DMing me, commenting, seeing it on Twitter. Who are these dudes he played against? And comparing the eras. So I think there are now people taking shots at Jordan that before this documentary never had the audacity to do that.
All right, stay right where you are. Coming up, Bucky Brooks is just around the corner. We're going to go out to his crib. Talk about Donovan McNabb, who's backtracking, I think, on his comments about Cam Newton, Dak Prescott, and other black quarterbacks perhaps being mistreated. All right, speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Speak for Yourself, presented to you by Hyundai. All right, let's roll out to Bucky Brooks's crib. And let's continue a conversation we started, I believe, yesterday about Donovan McNabb. McNabb made some put out a tweet that was interpreted by many of us as playing the race card as it relates to Andy Dalton signing with the Dallas Cowboys. McNabb tweeted out, so Andy Dalton signs a one-year deal for up to $7 million if he reaches possible incentives. Jameis Winston signs a one-year deal for $1 million. Dak can't seem to get his contract he deserves. And Cameron Newton is still on the street. Anyone have any questions? Am I the only one? All right, Donovan McNabb, people interpreted this as playing the race card. I was one of those people. He has since put out tweets today, clarifying it last night. As I continue to look and read responses from people, it truly makes you wonder how people really feel about individuals. The fact that I stated the facts of what we were presented and never mentioned anything about race, then people take it there, is hilarious to me. Then his next tweet, I asked a simple question and people went left with their commentary. It also makes you think of the issues that people are touching on. I think if you listen to Marcellus Wiley and Bucky Brooks, there are questions you need to ask yourself.
Right.
Donovan McNabb, a fan of the show, obviously. Marcellus, yes. Do you believe McNabb here that he was not playing the race card?
I do believe McNabb. Certainly I do. Anyone who doesn't believe McNabb still must have reasonable doubt. Therefore, he is innocent of all race card charges. You got to look at this situation like literally matter of fact, Whitlock. I think, being real, if you thought this was about race, then you're telling on yourself. A classic case of projection. Mm. If you look at the tweet, the first thing about the tweet was about a white quarterback who actually wasn't getting his proper value. So if you continue to look at it through that lens of a quarterback money and value conversation, you start to realize he's right. Andy Dalton's not even going to get $7 million. He's going to get $3 million, and he's not going to get any incentives because he's a backup. And then you start looking at Dak couldn't get his money. Cam is jobless. Jameis got a low ball offer. He's having a quarterback value money conversation, and I believe that. When you start to look deeper into it, knowing Donovan McNabb made $100 million in his own career, so how dare he claim victim of being a black quarterback, I really think he asked the open-ended question, kind of, for people to take it where they wanted to so he can learn from the evidence of others, more so than suggesting what other people should think. people kind of got tricked and they chased their own tail. But McNabb, innocent of these charges.
Marcellus being nice. You know this is a racial response, meaning it alludes to race. He didn't say and play the race card directly, but he indirectly insinuated that maybe, just maybe, there were some racial implications to the reason why Jameis Winston had a low ball deal, Dak Prescott hasn't got paid yet, and Cam Newton is still on those streaks. And some of this comes from Donovan McNabb understanding the stereotypes that are associated with playing an African-American quarterback in the National Football League. Look, let's be honest, going all the way back to the 60s and 70s, blacks playing quarterback had to deal with the stereotypes of, hey, when you're black, you're not smart enough.
2020 now,
Bucky. Playing quarterback, if you are black and
it's
playing
2020.
Quarterback, it's about your athleticism, whatever. And I'm glad that you bring up 2020, because in 2020, yes, there's been progress. Yeah. There are 9 starting quarterbacks that are minority. There are 8 starting backup quarterbacks that are minority, 6 of those being African-American. However, when you look at what is wanted in the backup quarterback room, smarts, guys that can take it from the board to the field with limited reps, it still plays to the stereotypes that blacks can only do it talented with their talent, not with their minds and those other things.
I don't know. Ain't nobody questioned that about Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. Lamar's the MVP. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in football.
Lamar Jackson.
Russell Wilson's the highest paid guy in football. I just don't think that, look, it's 2020, and we got to deal with what's going on today. And look, if there's some personality things about us that don't make us suitable to be a backup quarterback, maybe we got to change our personality and be a little less big personalities. Again, this has been an issue for me for my entire life. So too much personality, likes to crack jokes. There's a role I needed to play as a newspaper columnist, as a broadcaster, blah, blah, blah. I've had to make some adjustments. If that's what needs to go on, but again, our team sitting out there, discriminating against the guys, I just don't see it. And McNabb's being disingenuous by trying to suggest he wasn't playing the race card here. If he wasn't playing the race card, he wasn't making it racial. Explain what your point was. And maybe Donovan has no point. And I say this as someone that during Donovan McNabb's career in Philadelphia, huge Donovan McNabb fan, when he went to Washington and went to war with the Shanahans, nobody defended him more passionately and stronger than I have. And things just keep coming out. They're like, well, damn, maybe I was wrong. Donovan McNabb don't know the overtime rules. Donovan McNabb can't look at these quarterback situations and evaluate them properly without going to just some Twitter focus. It's the race car. And now he's got a backpedal like Deion Sanders because the heat's too big. The heat's too strong. Stand up and say it with your chest out, Donovan, if that's what you believe. Donovan's never been afraid of this. When he was playing it at his prime, he called out the NFL at that time, said early in his career, he said there's a different standard for black quarterbacks. He said this during his prime in Philadelphia, and I understood his comments then at that time. But in 2020, when the black quarterback is dominating this way and teams just aren't making those type decisions, when they're going up to get a Jordan Love and put pressure on an Aaron Rodgers, when they go out and get a Jalen Hurts, Donovan, just stop it, man. Don't hide behind Bucky and Marcellus, man. Say it with your chest out. You played the position. You're a bright guy. Say what you really think. Explain. If you wasn't playing the race card, at least tell us what it is you were trying to say. Don't leave it on Marcellus's hand to try to interpret it.
Well, let me say this, Jason. It's not on McNabb to untangle all of our assumptions and all the places we want to take this. McNabb has never been scared to say what he thinks. So for him to go there now, it's a little late in his life and his career for all of a sudden he now is scared to go out there and tell you his honest truth and say it with his chest. If we read the tweet literally, and even Bucky made this mistake, Bucky said he indirectly insinuated. What does that mean, Bucky? The first line is about Andy Dalton. Last time I checked, he ain't black. And he brought him up as his first example. But knowing us, we only want to read the black parts. And we went to the second line and finished it. And that's unfair to Donovan McNabb. The only thing I can hear in my courtroom that he's guilty of, and it's a misdemeanor, is throwing a rock and hiding his hands. He just threw the rock, and everybody jumped to their own conclusions. And I've been guilty of this before. I'm walking around with my boys. We're walking down the street back in my days when I was playing and young, single. And I'm like, look at her. And immediately, it can go this way or that way. You can say, yeah, she is fine. Or you can be like, she ain't that cute. All I said was, look at her. Now, where you took it is where you took it. Bucky, I just said, look at her. Now you getting mad at me for saying, look at her? That's on you, Buck, what you thinking.
Nah, that's not on me. And Marcellus, I'm so surprised. I'm sure sometime at Columbia you took some critical thought classes and you were able to do these word problems where you could deduce where we were going. Maybe that's only in North Carolina. I don't know. But what I saw was Donovan McNabb teed this up. He talked about Andy Dalton, but then after that, he listed three black quarterbacks, and he just made you think about, look at their place and look at the challenges. I think Donovan McNabb's frustration with all of this comes from, look, last year we had this debate when Cam Newton went out and Kyle Allen went in. We were quick to try and give away Cam Newton's job. Dak Prescott has been balling for the last 2 years. Andy Dalton is signed as a backup, and the conversation is now Andy Dalton is going to replace Dak Prescott. I think when it goes all the way back to Donovan McNabb talking about the double standard, that is what he's talking about. He's not saying directly that anyone is saying, hey, we judge these quarterbacks like this and the other quarterbacks in another way. He is saying, just listen. Take the temperature of the room and you get all your answers. Just like the responses that he got back were fire because he put it out there. People told on themselves.
Bucky, let me ask you this. If you say Dak Prescott has been balling out the last 2 years,
yes.
What would you describe Aaron Rodgers as doing? And if Aaron Rodgers, can go out and draft Jordan Love, if they can go out and draft Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers, why can't Dallas sign Andy Dalton to put some pressure on Dak Prescott? We're going to have to define what balling out entails at the quarterback position, because I don't think we can put that on Dak.
Oh, we can't do it. See, here's the thing that I like about Dak Prescott when it comes to this conversation. A year ago, it was about, hey, I need to see him put up numbers. They are winning in spite of him. Cool. So then he says, okay, well, I will put up numbers that are career numbers for me when it comes to yards and touchdowns and all those things. But now it's like, oh, but they didn't win. So when we talk about the goalpost moving, that's what we're talking about. For Dak Prescott is, what do you want me to do to get this money? And so now everyone is having a renaissance and a love affair with Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton is so great, he's going to put pressure on him. Did anyone look and see that Andy Dalton was replaced by Ryan Finley last year? That they kicked him out of Cincinnati to get Joe Burrow? But I'm supposed to believe that he is in Dallas to replace Dak Prescott, who hasn't missed a game. I'm just saying, that same Dak Prescott kept Tony Romo from getting his job back. I understand what Donovan McNabb is alluding to when he talks
preach,
about
Bucky, it. Preach, Bucky, preach!
Bucky, we got to go, and I know you played at North Carolina, a basketball school. So let me explain football to you and how it works. There's one goalpost. And the goalpost is set on balling out and winning. They go hand in hand. The you play the game to win. Herm Edwards told you that. So if you ball out and go 8-8, you ain't really balling out. If you ball out and go 12-4, or if you just mediocre and go 12-4, that's the purpose of the game. But again, you went to North Carolina. That's Dean Smith and Roy Williams School, Michael Jordan There's School. Nobody. Oh, no I guess team. Lawrence Taylor's from there.
I got to get mine.
All right, we got to keep moving. Lamar Arrington's around the corner. We're going to go out to his crib. Myles Garrett, some people say he should be the highest paid defensive end in football, $25 million a year. Is that crazy? Speak for yourself from the crib. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley on a wonderful Wednesday hump day. All right, let's roll out to LeVar Arrington's crib. And we're going to talk about Myles Garrett. Last time we saw him on a football field, he was slamming his helmet into Mason Rudolph. things a lot better for Myles Garrett right now. Ian Rappaport reporting that Garrett could be the first $25 million a year pass rusher. Garrett, of course, last year played just 10 games, had 10 sacks. The year before had 13 and a half sacks. Has played in one Pro Bowl, but is now being talked about as a $25 million a year pass rusher. Marcellus, you're the expert here. Is Myles Garrett worth $25 million a year?
Absolutely. He's worth it. We're talking about not only his production, his potential, and then you also have to map on the calendar in terms of when this deal may be struck. It could be an extension, and it may not be an extension, but think about it. They already picked up his fifth-year option, so we have two more years, potentially even franchise situations, but two-plus years, you will see Myles Garrett be a guy who eclipses $25 million annually. And let's talk about his production, because I think a lot of times it gets lost in terms of what a defensive lineman is being on the field in terms of grade. In our D-line room, we used to always have this thing called sack rate. Coach basically wanted to know, if you started a game, what's the percentage chance you're going to sack the quarterback? Do you know where Myles Garrett is right now? 87% of the time. That's high. To give you some reference, Bruce Smith, career, 75%. Now, obviously, these numbers are skewed. When you play longer, typically your sack rate decreases. But you talk about guys like Strahan, 69%. You talk about guys now like Chandler Jones, 83%. And you got Myles Garrett at 87%. Almost every game that he starts, he's bringing that quarterback down. And they know that. Yes, he's had injuries. Yes, he had a suspension. But boy, does he have off-the-chart ability and production when you look at when he goes out there, what comes in terms of that production. He's going to get that $25 million, and I think he deserves it.
Yeah, I'm saying yes as well. I think my reasoning is different. It's based upon the consistency of what I've been saying when I discuss matters around Dak Prescott or any other player that is seeking to get a high contract, which is you are worth what your employer is willing to value you at. You put a number out there. If Myles Garrett's people are putting a number out there and that number is agreed upon by his employer, then the distinct relationship between the employer and the employee is saying that once we sign on this dotted line, our name's dry, the ink is dry, the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted. You're saying the agreement and the relationship between you, the employee, and you, the employer, says that this is my value to this company. So to me, if the Cleveland Browns, within their room of negotiation and their brain trust, their round table of decision makers, say that they see a value in Myles Garrett where they're going to make him the highest paid pass rusher.
I don't want the Browns play the game. Position. Well, I want your position, LeVar. Is he worth $25 million? I don't care about the Browns.
100%. But you have to care because that's where the $25 million is coming from. So
no,
if he's worth 25.
No,
well, he's worth 25 to me. He's worth 25 to me if $25 million is coming from the bank account of the Cleveland Browns. If the Cleveland Browns ain't paying it, then we don't have to care about it.
Right.
But it's going to be the Cleveland Browns that
is
play.
Is he going to produce at a $25 million pay? Is he the best pass rusher in the NFL?
The problem with what you're saying is that you're basing the parameters of him getting $25 million off of what you think he's going to produce on the field. It is the value of what the Cleveland Browns believe him or perceive him to be as to why he's going to get that $25 million. People have been highest paid that have not been productive guys and still get paid. Odell Beckham has gotten paid. He hasn't been the highest productive type of guy, but he was valued enough to get the pay that he was able to get.
Yeah, at one point, the Seattle Seahawks valued Matt Flynn at whatever ridiculous rate that it was. And people like me went on TV and said, hey, man, that's ridiculous. He ain't worth that. He didn't do enough in his previous job to justify that amount of money. That's the discussion we're having about Myles Garrett. I think Marcel has made a pretty good argument about his sack rate. And even when you, and look, I'm a critic of Myles Garrett. I think he's a flake and a goofball. I don't trust him character wise in the locker room. But in terms of when you put that film on in a game, does he get to the quarterback? And I understand how important it is to get to the quarterback, and this guy does it consistently when he's available. Would I pay him this money? No, because I question his character. Will he be able to stay on the field in terms of doing dumb things that get him into trouble? He's like a different version of Vontaze Burfict. Vontaze Burfict does a lot of stuff out of malice and stupidity that gets him into trouble. Myles Garrett does things out of stupidity to get him into trouble on the field and could have more suspensions. But as a pure pass rusher, is he arguably the best one going in the NFL right now? Had he not been suspended last year, would that have been crystal clear with him probably having 16 sacks for the season? Probably. But to me, the character issues kind of say I would proceed with caution. And before I'd start talking about giving this dude some kind of major payday, I need to see one full year of this dude go through the NFL without any controversy, without anything to distract from the team, without anything that hurts the team.
Yeah, I mean, look, what you're talking about, I'm glad we can now hone our focus into. When you get on the field, what the hell are you doing? And only Shaq Barrett I've seen and Chandler Jones of recent memory is doing what Myles Garrett is doing. And part of that is availability. But in terms of, like, Shaq Barrett has 108%. That means not only is he going to get on the field and get one sack, he's going to be coming close to getting his second sack in most games. And that's a high click rate when you're talking about these guys. And just to throw in a little love for you guys, Myles Garrett has started 35 games and already has 38.5 sacks. 30.5 sacks in 35 games. You know how many sacks I had in my first 35 starts? 34. Just letting y'all know, I should have got paid a long time ago, brother. Just letting y'all know how your boy did it. It was a real thing.
Should have got $25 million a year as well. All right. Thank you, LeVar. Right. We got to keep it rolling. Isaiah Thomas, NBA Hall of Famer, a co-star in the Last Dance documentary. Isaiah Thomas from his crib. Speak for yourself, from the crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this.
That's my dog.
All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, happy Wednesday. All right, let's roll out to Isaiah Thomas's crib. The former Piston great NBA Hall of Famer, two-time NBA champion, and co-star of the Last Dance documentary, unintended co-star. Isaiah, you have made a comment, though we brought you on today because you made a comment that really irked me, which is unusual for you. But you said that the athletes of today aren't getting the credit that they could, and that LeBron and Kevin Durant and these guys would have dominated your era of the NBA. I completely disagree with that, but why do you believe this about LeBron James, and why would he been so dominant in your era?
And both of you being former athletes, we all come to the table, and normally, if all things being even, the bigger, faster, stronger athlete wins. Now, the only way a smaller person has any chance of beating a bigger, stronger, faster athlete is if that bigger, faster, stronger athlete makes a mistake, which gives that smaller player a chance to win. When I look at LeBron James, he and Kevin Durant, if you put both of them in our era, and if you were to put Kevin Durant on our team with the Pistons, or if you were to put LeBron James on our team with the Pistons, you know, both of those guys would be probably the best players and the best scorers on our team. And when I look at those two guys as being freaks, you know, in the modern day era, and if you put them back in our era, they would have been freaks because of their athleticism. I've never seen two players like a Durant and LeBron James ever in all NBA with the size and the skill set that they both possess.
I wholeheartedly agree with you, Isaiah. Look, the only counter to that conversation really is, well, if the guys of yesterday had all the technology, the mindset, the access, et cetera, the medical resources, things would be different for those guys as well. True. But when we're talking about the physics, bigger, faster, stronger, and then if you look at the volume, the collection of athletes now, I dare someone to look at the talent level of the sixth man back in the 80s versus the sixth man right now in terms of what you're seeing. It's just a different animal, and it's okay. I think only the ego holds on that thinks that this world is not evolving and sports are not evolving as well. These guys are walking in the gym, jumping out the gym. But back in the day, we heard Jordan rules and others say, if he just doesn't get in the air, we have a chance. Well, good luck having that as a strategy now, because everybody's in the damn air. So you can just see, looking at yesterday, no slight to greatness, because greatness cuts through era. But the average Joe of yesterday wouldn't even be known today because there are just too many talented guys.
But, you know, when we,
my position, Isaiah, would be if Kevin Durant played back in your era, he would play the game differently. He might have a post-up game. He might be the next iteration of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. If LeBron was played in your era, he might have played the game the way Karl Malone played it rather than the way the game is played today.
That is absolutely true, and that's where coaching and scheme and system comes in. And it's like Michael Jordan is probably the greatest, you know, wing scorer that's ever played the game. And the reason why I say wing scorer, because when we don't count Chamberlain and we don't count Kareem in the conversation. So now I put it in the category, he's the greatest wing scorer ever. He and LeBron James. Now, that being said, if Michael Jordan played in today's era, he would be a different player. He would probably have a coach saying to him he couldn't take the mid-range shot. Michael Jordan would either be dunking or shooting a three-point shot. He'd be great at both of them, but the thing that he's known for in terms of being, you know, probably the greatest mid-range player ever, we wouldn't see that in today's game if he was in this era.
And okay, but also, I think the way y'all competed in that era is completely different than the way guys compete in this era. The competition was more fierce in your era. Do you disagree with that?
I think because of the physicality of the game that was allowed during that era, it definitely makes you a little bit more competitive, and it makes things tougher for you because of the physicality. Resistance is always good. You know, and both of you are, you know, former football players. So, you know, if you put Jerry Rice in today's game, who's going to cover him? They couldn't cover him back then. You put him in today's game where you know, he can run down the field and he can go across the middle. Back when you guys were playing football, you know, very few receivers went across the middle. In basketball, the rules are very similar to football. Everything has changed. So consequently, the statistics have gone up in football, just like the statistics have gone up in individual performances in basketball. But there are a lot of things that you can do now in basketball, just like in football. There are a lot of things that you can do that, you know, 15, 20 years ago, you know, you just couldn't do.
Look, I got a crazy story real quick about exactly what you asked, Jason. Great question. Because things look tougher doesn't mean that they're better. We had a slower receiver in Jacksonville one time in training camp, running, throw the ball, deep route. He dove for it, caught it, the crowd erupted. You know what our coach said? If he was faster, he wouldn't have had to dive. That's my point. That's what we're seeing right now. These guys ain't got to do all that. They are different, brother. It's physics. It's crazy. Sorry.
No, I mean, really, they are different. You know, before I met Steph Curry, I thought Steph Curry and I was the same size. And then when I met him, you know, he's a little bigger than me. You know?
Isaiah, thank you so much. We got to keep it moving. Want to have you back when the Last Dance documentary is over, because we really want to get into that in depth. All right, Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley on a Wednesday afternoon. Uncle Jimmy's just around the corner. More Speak for Yourself after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Let's roll out to Uncle Jimmy's crib. Get his take. Uncle Jimmy.
You know.
Do you want to be like Michael Jordan?
You know.
Do you want to be like Mike?
Let me tell you something, man. Hey, Mike had brothers trying to be like Mike that didn't even know that they was trying to be like Mike. Hey, man, Mike had brothers dressing clean, clean cut, clean shaven, no tattoos, one earring, and that was it. Michael Jordan showed brothers that if you showed up, went to work, did your job, you'd win. Soon as he retired, what did the NBA do? Bought in Allen Iverson, tattoos, gold teeth, saggy pants, and our culture went to hell ever since. That's it. The NBA did it.
No practice.
Not bad, Uncle Jimmy. We'll see you tomorrow. Maroon.